we're getting more questions around inheritance tax. Obviously, questions coming in for people who were thought they weren't going to be in inheritance tax because they were non-domiciled, and now the inheritance tax regime is obviously changing to a long-term residence sort of setup. Yep.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR Partners.
Welcome back to the Tax Compass podcast from LSR Partners with me, Simon Ruey, and my business partner, Laura Sant.
Hi.
So today is on gifts. Gifts is nice to get. I don't really ever get any gifts. So sad. But were I to get a gift, I'd be all happy. From a tax perspective, what we're going to talk about is what the tax implications of giving things to other people are. It can impact us in quite a lot of different ways from a tax perspective across different areas of tax. So we're going to start with one that's quite often used, which is gifting property. So Laura, do you want to talk a little bit about the sort of starting point around gifting things from a property perspective?
So I suppose when you're gifting assets in general, you've got this kind of three main taxes I'd say you need to be thinking about: capital gains tax, stamp duty land tax, or land and buildings.
Stamp duty land tax, I think.
Yeah, we'll go with
stamp
that.
Duty. We'll call it stamp duty.
Yeah, and inheritance tax. Those are the three that you probably want to be making sure that you're considering if you're looking at gifting a property. I suppose in terms of gifting a property and the tax implications, it depends on who you're gifting it to. So, for example, if you're gifting it to a spouse
or civil partner,
the starting point from capital gains tax perspective is it can be transferred at nil loss, nil gain.
So, is it no gain or is it exempt from capital gains tax?
That's a very good question.
I think it's exempt.
Okay.
I was having a look at this for a client actually this morning, which is why I knew that's why that was a trick question. So that's important, isn't it? And it's, again, just to reiterate the fact that it's a spouse or civil partner, i.e. you've got to be in a legally recognised partnership. It can't just be cohabitation.
Yes. So that's kind of the starting point. If you are gifting a property to anybody else, I suppose by definition of a gift, you're not kind of taking any monetary value from it. But like there is a crystallisation of a gain at the point when you gift a property to anybody else. And when you are looking at, if you're looking at disposing of a property to someone, even if you're not taking any money for it, you are going to have to, assuming that there's a chargeable gain and capital gains tax to pay, you are going to need to make sure that you're reporting it as a disposal within 60 days of the completion of conveyancing, whether you're resident, non-resident, and paying over any taxes that are due to HMRC.
So just as an example, let's say Joe Bloggs has a house that's worth 500 grand and he bought it for 200 grand and he gives it to, I don't know, his cousin who lives in Australia.
Yeah.
Who pays the tax?
So it would be Joe Bloggs who's gifted the property. That's who the tax is due on. So he'd be paying tax on the £300,000 gain, obviously taking into consideration any relief if it's been his main residence,
sure,
for example, and there might be some reliefs that are available. And then his cousin or whoever in Australia would then have a base price of that property for £500,000 from a UK perspective.
Yeah, but if that gift had been to Joe Bloggs' missus, no capital gains tax. Now, coming back to this spousal point, this is quite interesting. So we have a client who's they live in Switzerland, I think,
yes,
don't they? And he's looking at optimizing his portfolio. He's got two properties in the UK, and he's recently got married. Thinking about gifting it part of the property to his spouse, which mm-hmm. will obviously be outside the scope of capital gains tax from his perspective.
Yes.
It's not quite as simple as that when it comes to stamp duty, is it?
No. So from a stamp duty perspective, HMRC will look at what the monetary value of the
transfer is.
So if you owned the property outright.
Yeah, it's the consideration, isn't it?
Yes. So if you owned the property outright, there's no consideration. If it was fully gifted, there was no transfer of cash. If, however, there's a mortgage outstanding on the property, then there is going to be some consideration as far as HMRC are considered.
Yeah, so they'll treat, so again, example, you have a house worth 500 grand, it's got a mortgage of 300 grand on it, you gift half the property to your spouse. From a stamp duty perspective, the consideration would be 150,000, which is 50% of the mortgage, on the basis that the spouse would end up having to take on the liability for the mortgage, because otherwise the mortgage company wouldn't allow the transfer.
Yes.
And that's probably important to note to people, because we often get this question, and we'll come on to talk a little bit about trust deeds that can change beneficial ownership in a moment. But if you're transferring legal ownership, you will have to make sure, and the mortgage company will know you've done it, because you'll have to change the title deeds at the land registry, and the mortgage company obviously have a charge and they would have to sign it off.
Yes.
And so then if you're doing that, you might end up with an unexpected SDLT bill because of that transfer, provided it's, and they've just dropped the rates again, haven't they, down to 125,000 is the lower end of it. It was 250,000 up until the 1st of April, when the government changed it and cut it in half.
Yes.
So yeah, that's an important one, because we sometimes get clients, don't we, who think, oh, this is a clever way of reducing down my liability of one sort or another, or they're thinking inheritance tax, and then suddenly it's like, oh no, I've created a significant stamp duty charge.
Yes. And I was going to say, I don't know what I was going to say, but it is something that tends to be the tax that's least considered when people are thinking about making a transfer from one person to another.
And so that's interspousal. Let's talk a little bit for property about what we see sometimes around inheritance tax.
Yeah. So I suppose if you're transferring to somebody not a spouse, then the starting point is it's potentially exempt transfer. This is assuming it's individual to individual. And therefore, from an inheritance tax perspective, the asset will remain in your estate for 7 years. So as long as you survived 7 years, then it's outside of your estate. But within the 7 years, it forms part of your estate. And I saw a scenario, it was a few years ago, where there was a couple. The husband had passed away. The asset, I think, had been transferred to his wife, and then his wife had transferred the half that was his to their daughter. She then passed away within 7 years of the gift. And it was one of those where if she hadn't done that, there'd have been, I can't remember the specifics of it, but it was one of those where if it hadn't been done like that, there'd have been no inheritance tax.
And but it was because she transferred it, because this is to do with the fact that you get the additional family home to a direct descendant.
I would imagine that was what it was. I can't remember the specifics, but I just remember being surprised because
you only get that additional bit of relief on death. It's not for a transfer that happens before death, right?
Yes.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because inheritance tax is one of those things where people give it a lot of consideration. Do you want to talk just a little bit? Again, it's a sort of scenario around gifting of the client we've been helping who's put a house in a trust.
So I think in this particular scenario, client has three children, two of which are over 18 and one of which is under 18. So somebody who's under 18 cannot own a property. So effectively the property can be transferred in name to the two older kids. The youngest one, it has to be held in a trust. To make matters more complicated, the individual concerned is still living in the property. And the issue you sometimes have in instances like that, and again, this is a scenario where people might look to transfer property into the kid's name to reduce what's going on in their estate. But then they continue to live in the property. And from HMRC's perspective, that can generally be considered to be a gift with a reservation of benefit. Because effectively, if you're continuing to live in the property...
You haven't really done anything. Let's say I do that. I transfer my house to my kids and then I carry on living in it. Can I not pay the market rent?
Yeah, so that's the way to prevent gifts with a reservation of benefit. Is to make sure that you are paying the market rent, but you can have to kind of make sure that you're paying attention to what the market rent is like, because some people might turn around and go, oh, well, I'm paying market rent. They figure it out when it first happens.
10 years later, they're still paying the same rate.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've got to make sure that you're kind of being ultra cautious with the rules, because if not, it has a chance of falling through.
And of course, there's tax implications for the kids who are getting rental income.
Yeah. So A, the kids are getting rental income, but for the underage kid, the minor child, effectively that rental income has to be reported on the parents' tax return.
Yeah, so that's the really interesting thing there. So if my kids are both over 18, theoretically I could give them this house, I could pay them market rent for it. They could declare that on their tax return as rental income.
Yes.
They could then gift me the cash net of the tax.
Yep.
And we could just go around in a circle and we could just chisel off a little bit with the tax liability every year.
Yep.
And on the face of it, that would take the house outside of my inheritance tax, the scope of my inheritance tax.
Yes.
But if they're under 18, it would be a nothing, because the rules would look at it and go, no, that's now on you, because your child can't own a house and can't receive rental income. That's back on you.
Yep.
And this is interesting, right? Because recently I unwound an investment that I gifted to my children. And because they're both over 18, the tax was on them. And fortunately, it was within their personal allowances. So therefore, there was no tax. Whereas had I kept it, that would have been taxable. But it only ever starts to work when you've got children who are adults.
Yes. Got a bit of a while to wait for it on my side, I think.
So coming back to the overall gifting thing, are there any other... I'm just trying to think about like gifts of other assets. And I guess the point around that sort of thing is, again, from like a spousal perspective, there's actually quite a lot you can do around sharing out assets between you and your spouse. We see it both with financial investments where essentially any transfers between spouses are exempt from tax.
Yeah.
And so it's the most simple planning that you can do.
Yes.
And also you can do it, and this is interesting. I did a piece of work for a French guy and got really into the weeds on usufruct, which is the continental way of splitting the legal ownership and the beneficial ownership. Under English law, we fortunately just term it legal ownership and beneficial ownership.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because you can keep your legal ownership at 50-50 on a property, say.
Yes.
But you can change the beneficial ownership. That's right, isn't it?
Yes. So, for example, if you owned a property with somebody other than your spouse, and I don't know, say siblings, for example, one sibling's earning hundreds of thousands and the other sibling's earning
tens of thousands.
Yes. And so the one who's earning a lot of money says, actually, do you know what? You're my sibling, and why don't you have the rental profits this year? Like, you know, you have the money, I don't need the money. then as siblings or anybody other than spouses, you can effectively make a decision year on year. Okay, well, you know, like a bit of a partnership. This is how much profits the one's had. This is how much profits the other's had. And you would declare the relevant portion of income and profits received. If we're looking at spouses, then from HMRC's perspective, they will automatically assume
it's 50-50.
And unless you have submitted a form, I think it's called an R17.
It is, yeah.
Well, which
I again was able to check that because of this bit of work I was doing.
Yeah. So in terms of that, you would fill in the form, you'd communicate that to HMRC. You generally, I think, have to provide a bit of evidence in terms of this is showing that the beneficial ownership is split differently. And you would then be able to report the applicable portion on the relevant tax returns. The one thing to note with that form, though, is you can't apply it retrospectively. So
it's only going forward prospectively.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting, though, isn't it? Because if you, and sorry, the point around that is that the way you do it is you do a declaration of trust. And one of the things I found out, again, having done this myself, is that you need to make sure it's witnessed properly, because otherwise it doesn't work as a declaration of trust.
Yeah.
But The other thing that's interesting is that I wonder what they would say, HMRC, if you'd done a declaration of trust that was witnessed and was legally binding, but you didn't fill out a Form 17. Now, I did some digging into this, and it, as usual with these things, the answer was, it's not clear.
Yeah.
Because what was interesting in doing the research was, if you've entered into a legally binding declaration of trust, then as a matter of fact, you have changed the beneficial ownership.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, the tax is done on the beneficial ownership. Whether or not you've reported it to HMRC, on the face of it, shouldn't change anything. But obviously, whenever you look at HMRC, they say, oh, no, you've got to do that.
Yeah.
Because I think they're aware of the fact that, you know, you can manipulate it. But I think the point you made at the end there about prospective as opposed to retrospective, on the siblings point, you can sort of divvy it up at the end of the year, which seems totally counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's the thing. But it's also really worth people thinking about that. We've got clients who live in China. One's British, one's Chinese. The British partner gets, or spouse gets, a personal allowance. The Chinese one doesn't.
Yep.
A really simple, super easy tax thing for them is change the beneficial ownership to make sure the husband's using up all of his personal allowance.
Yeah.
Because he's non-resident, whatever he might be earning in China doesn't get taxed in the UK, so it's not a relevant thing. But to be in a situation where you leave some personal allowance on the table and then the wife had a tax bill is just a simple one to solve, right?
It is. It is. But again, unfortunately, nothing can be done
retrospectively.
So it'll always have to be planning point, I suppose.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because we're getting more questions around inheritance tax. Obviously, questions coming in for people who were thought they weren't going to be in inheritance tax because they were non-domiciled, and now the inheritance tax regime is obviously changing to a long-term residence sort of setup. Yep. I have to say it's something I think more and more about in terms of inheritance tax planning, making sure assets are in the right place at the right time for ensuring that. It's one of those things that you need to get ahead of the curve, especially because a lot of the inheritance tax stuff around gifting, this 7 years point and potentially exempt transfers is really, really worth taking into consideration, because on the face of it, you can do a huge amount to manage down your inheritance tax pot when you've got what I would think of as sort of financial passive assets.
Yeah.
The thing that's so problematic and obviously one of the most controversial changes to the tax rules since the new government came in is the change to inheritance tax relief around farms and business assets.
Yeah.
Is that obviously you can't give away a business asset and then keep doing the business because of the reservation of benefit point, right?
Yeah.
So that really does make it difficult. So gifting assets is a really interesting one. It's an area of key planning opportunities. And as we were talking about just at the end there, quite often you need to be doing stuff before they take effect, i.e. prospectively. It's not something you can do like through a tax return or anything like that. So if you need help in this area, please do get in touch with us. And if you've enjoyed listening to our podcast, please give us a review and subscribe, which allows us more time to be doing this rather than doing tax returns.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.